There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. And I can't wait to talk with you about a bunch of different issues and a lot of guests coming up on today's show. And we'll get into, in the second hour, it's a guest who used to come on the show with me a bunch in days gone by and talking about that dismal science of economics. But right now, it's one that I think a lot of people are talking about. And Daniel J. Smith, who used to be at Troy University, he's our professor at MTSU. He's going to... I try to do that like I'm hip. Middle Tennessee State University. He's going to join us in hour number two. Should be an interesting conversation with him. Also, coming up on today's show, we'll check... Well, I'll do this right now. It's an updated number. I did get a note here from the Mobile County Health Department that they have moved their normal presser to a little bit later today. I think that's going to be at 3 at Government Plaza. But right now, the numbers have changed since the morning show, and they are up for cases of coronavirus in the state of Alabama. Now, 283 cases in the state. 10 cases in Mobile County. That's been a significant jump. Baldwin County at 4, and Washington County still at 1. As you talk about those counties and more, you're talking about Congressional District 1, and our Congressman Bradley Byrne is joining us right now to talk more about the federal angle and the local angle here for coronavirus and the economy. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, it's good to be with you, Sean.
Yeah, those numbers are climbing. I'm looking at the... Obviously, people say, well, look at California, look at Washington State. Sure, that's bad news. But I'm thinking back here at home, these numbers are climbing, and that's not unexpected.
No, it's not. So what's happened is we've increased the number of tests that we've given. We've given over 2,800 tests in the state of Alabama, and we have 283 cases. That's a positive rate of about 10%, which is just right on the mark for what Dr. Fauci told us we would be seeing. So... not unexpected at all. Glad the numbers down in this part of the state are as low as they are, 15. Mm-hmm. As you probably know, they've got almost 100 cases in Jefferson County alone. So compared to the rest of the state, we're doing a little better. But as our testing goes up, you're going to see the number of cases in Southwest Alabama go up with it.
Yeah, you know, I don't want to... Well, I do want to get into a statistics discussion, but we won't. But I want you to explain in regular folks' language what we're talking about here is that as you increase the testing, it may not physically be more cases of COVID-19 out there. We're just now aware of them, correct?
That's right. That's right. And we've known for some time that as we ramp up testing that we would see this. But we've got to get the amount of testing up, both to help the healthcare professionals, but also help inform us on a macro basis. All right, where is this thing now? Where is it going? Because remember what Dr. Fauci said, we know we've turned a corner when the number of new cases per day starts going down. Well, we can't get to that point till we get testing at the right level. So nationwide, we've actually done a lot better. We're up to 367,000 tests now. So we're beginning to get to the point where we're getting the testing we need to be able to get the sort of macro data we need. But it's going to take at least another week or so for us to even get that much information to be able to know what we're doing.
The tests coming from different sources, I know we've talked about the private test and kind of what we've learned from Church of the Highlands up in Birmingham. I was talking to Mayor Stimson about that. But on the public side of this, you have Mayor Stimson saying he's, till next week sometime or early April. It looks like early April before we have tests available. What's going on? Are those the ones coming on the public side or are those private tests? What's your understanding of that?
Those are mainly private tests. There's a steady flow, it is increasing, but there's a steady flow of public tests. But the big jump up in testing is coming from these private labs. And more of those have been approved by the FDA, so you're going to see more and more of those coming online, which is good. And remember, April the 1st is a week from today. Mm-hmm. So that's a short time frame if you stop and think about it.
So with these additional tests, obviously we're talking about the, as you get more tests, there's probably going to be more people identified. I wonder if we reach that, because you talked about it, what Dr. Fauci said, reaching that plateau or that high point before we start declining a number of cases. You know, I wonder how quickly we get there. In other words, is that going on or will be going on before the testing catches up with it? See what I'm saying? Is it naturally occurring before we can even see it in testing?
Well, there's an epidemiologist from the University of Florida, and he's been echoed by a couple other experts, that's predicting now that we're going to reach the top end of this in 3 weeks. So that means that both deaths and positive tests will get to the top in terms of rate per day in 3 weeks. And then, as Dr. Fauci said, if that's the right moment, then you have this sort of steady downward number in the number of newly reported cases. So once you get to that point, then you know you've turned the corner. Now, this thing ebbs and flows. We've got to be prepared for ebbs and flows. But that's actually, from my point of view, pretty helpful that we've got as few as 3 weeks that we have to look forward to before we get to the point where we're coming down the other side of this.
Now, I know President Trump talking about yesterday for Easter to start getting things back to normal for the economy. That's just a general, right? I mean, that's aspirational. Yeah. It could very easily be. What I worry is people will think that if it's not ready to go by April, then there's something wrong. It could go longer very easily, right?
Yeah, we could go into mid to late April with this thing. But this is all, every time a scientist gets up and says something, they've got to give you their best projection because we don't know.
Sure.
But this is the first time, and I saw this epidemiologist from Florida, that's the first time I've heard somebody that's put a hard number on it. And I'm sure if he were on the phone with you and me, he'd say, well, it's a hard number, but it could slip a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you're hearing, though, whether it's 3 weeks or something a little bit longer, it's not 3 months, okay?
Yeah.
And that's been part of the problem here. We've had a lot of the public health professionals, some of whom are just getting up and saying, look, we don't know, so we're giving you the worst-case scenario, and some of whom haven't done that. And it's not very useful for us as policymakers, as governmental officials, to make the decisions we've got to make about people's lives and the economy to get that sort of information. And I think if you watch the data as it comes in day by day, you'll see it continue to climb until it's going to get to a point sometime in April, my prediction, sometime mid to late April, when they're going to say, all right, now it's beginning to come back down in terms of the number of new cases. And that's when we know we've turned the corner. Now, not all of America's equal here.
Right.
You got 10 times the number of cases in New York State that you do in the state of California. I mean, New York
yeah.
State is the hot spot in the United States of America. We have a couple of other hot spots here and there. Obviously, Seattle's been a hot spot. For reasons I'm not real clear about, New Orleans is a hot spot.
Sure
but
is.
The real hot spot in America is New York State, and within New York State, New York City.
Well, okay, but I mean, it's all guesses on my part. You could say all the people that come and go out of New York as a port of call, whether they're coming in by, you know, whatever method. They're coming in, port of call, and traveling from Asia or traveling from Europe. That's one point. But I wonder if we look at it here, somewhere where we don't have those the issues they have in New York State. If we didn't, this gets into a bigger question, but if we didn't do what we're doing now, the self-quarantining, the social distancing, eventually we could reach those numbers. I mean, this virus could bounce around enough to become New York. It'd take us a lot longer, but that could happen.
Well, it could happen. Part of the problem with New York is density of population. So if you look at the total number of cases in the U.S., it's just under 60,000. 30,000 cases are in New York State, and most of those are in New York City, where you have very dense populations of people. In rural states like Alabama, we just don't have the density of population. Even in our cities, we don't necessarily have the
right
density of population. So I think that's part of what's going on here. But you've got some densely populated areas in California. So why is there such a huge increase in New York and, you know, not nearly that much of an increase in California. It's not clear at this point. We'll have to learn as we go along. But the truth of the matter is that we are getting more tests out there. We do have the president ramping up production through the Defense Production Act of PPE and related devices that we need to be able to treat people. So in terms of actually doing what we've got to do to combat the disease, I think we've made a real turn, and we need to understand how we've made that turn.
Now, you can imagine that there's many in the audience that are not completely up to snuff on the DPA and how that works. Can you give us a little cursory discussion of DPA?
Remember from your high school history books about what had to happen in World War II,
right?
Which is essentially we just revamped all of domestic manufacturing production for wartime production. Well, on a much smaller scale, that's what we're doing here. You would take factories that are building one sort of thing, and you turn them into factories that build ventilators or build these special masks, et cetera. And so the president has that power under the Defense Production Act to do that. He's invoked those powers. Now, he's invoking them working with business and industry. He's not walking in there, you know, with a bunch of mandates saying, you have to do what I say. He's working with them to make this happen. And a number of them have been very cooperative. So this is a national effort, and I think it's going to be producing what we need here. We still have some shortages right now. There's no question about it. The shortages are acute in New York. There's no question about that. But I think that we've turned the corner in terms of our ability to produce what we need to produce. We're just going to have to stay at it and understand it's a day-by-day thing.
Yeah, I've had a call at my desk yesterday from somebody here in AL1 in manufacturing asking what he could do to help, kind of what you were talking about in the present. So this isn't a news clip, y'all. This is a call at my desk. Somebody who has a manufacturing facility here, he said, do they come to him? Can he, if he's interested in helping out, is there a process? Do you have any idea how somebody would do that? This person has a machine shop and they're looking to help.
Yeah, what he should do is call my Washington office, and we will put him in touch with the people in the White House task force that are working on this. And my White House office number is 202-225-4931, 202-225-4931, and we'll put him in touch with the right person. By the way, my office in Washington is fully open, as is my district office. We haven't missed a beat. We're still doing what we need to do to fulfill the obligations we have with the people down here.
Speaking of doing what you have to do, I'm watching the other body in the Senate, and so they've come to an agreement. Help me understand. They came to agreement, but the vote, if it's unanimous, they don't have to show up, or help me here. How does that work?
Well, in the Senate, they can do a procedure that allows them to vote without having to go through all their procedural requirements, which are substantial in the Senate, by what's called unanimous consent, or UC.
Okay.
But if one senator objects, they got to go through all those onerous procedures that will take a fair amount of time. Now, as I understand it, they don't have complete text of the bill yet, so it's a little premature to say exactly what they're going to do, because nobody's going to agree to it until they see the text. And I don't blame any senator for doing that. They need to be able to understand it. But they have been very good, as opposed to what Pelosi did 2 weeks ago. They have been very good about putting out the changes they've been making to the bill as they go along. So, like me in my office, we've been able to watch it step by step. So now it's going to plop down a bill that we hadn't seen anything of when they get finished with it. So a lot of us have been able not only to watch it, you know, point by point as it's gone along. We've been given direct input through our leadership, and I'm very grateful for that opportunity. So this is very unlike what we went through 2 weeks ago. Now, assuming the Senate gets this thing passed this afternoon or tonight, the question is, what is the House going to do? Because we are not in formal session right now. We're in pro forma session. So all of us, virtually all of us, are back in our districts, as I am. So there were a number of members that wanted us to fly to not have to fly up there to vote by distance. But you can't do that under our rules. If one House member objects to our taking up this bill under unanimous consent of the House, then all of us will have to fly up there to go on the floor and vote on it. I think it's highly unlikely we'll get unanimous consent in the House. So my guess is that sometime tomorrow or Friday, we will all have to fly to Washington, all of us in the House, to vote on the final versions the Senate passes this afternoon or tonight. Now, if the Senate goes beyond this afternoon or tonight, that just means the House is postponed another day or so. Now, the big question there is, what is Nancy Pelosi going to do? You know, she comes flying in to San Francisco Sunday, throws a monkey wrench and everything, says, oh, I don't like that bill, produces her own 1,400-page bill with every liberal wish there ever was in the world thrown into it, basically stymied the negotiations that were going very well until she showed up. And now the Senate, I think, has basically said, look, we've got more important things to do here, and they're just doing their thing. And so Pelosi and her gang's going to figure out, are they going to try to sort of stop this whole process, or are they going to say, nope, we're going to have to just go along with what the Senate has put out there. There is, I'm not going to try to project that, because you can't predict what Nancy Pelosi and that gang's going to do.
For sure. I would come back. I want to talk more about what that you understand in the Senate bill, what that means. It's very interesting, y'all. Listen there. The congressman has had more time to be aware of what's in a Senate bill than the bill that was presented to him in the House. I think there's a tell there. We'll be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, right back to our conversation with Congressman Bradley Byrne. Check it in from right here in district, but you said it could be tomorrow, it could be Friday, that you most likely, it looks like, will be flying back up to vote.
Right. I don't think it's going to be tomorrow, but it might be tomorrow night. More likely, it'll be Friday.
Let's talk about some of the pieces. Am I fair to say that you've had more time to be familiar with the Senate bill than you were the one presented to you in the House?
Yeah, since I only had less than an hour in the House, yeah, I've had more time to study the Senate bill.
just want y'all to realize that. And okay, let's talk about, so what you've seen in the Senate bill, break it down for us here at home, the high points in this.
Yeah, well, let's start with what it's going to do for individuals. There will be individual tax rebates to people. It's $1,200 for individuals, $2,400 for couples, and then $500 per child. So if it's a man, woman, and two children, that's 24 plus $2,500, that's $3,400. It phases out at $75,000 in income for individuals, $150,000 for people joint, and it phases out completely once you get to $99,000 per individual and $198,000 for joint filers. So it's a pretty nice individual rebate for people, whether you've lost your job or not. It just goes out to everybody in the country who's, you know, got who files anything with the IRS. Now, that's for those individuals. There's also a substantial plus up here for unemployment insurance. So on top of whatever your state pays in benefits, the federal government's going to add $600 per week per person filing for unemployment benefits for 4 months, and then we're going to add 13 weeks of extended benefits on top of that. That's a $250 billion benefit to people who've lost their jobs in America. And the whole idea here is that we're trying to, you know, cover the gap for people who've been laid off, because most importantly in this bill, it's a small business interruption part for businesses less than 500 employees. It allows them to go get what's called an SBA 7A loan. And that loan can be had from their bankers, okay? They don't have to go through the SBA or the federal government. They go directly to whoever they bank with. And those banks make the loans to them, and then the federal government stands behind those loans. Now, you get, it's a pretty sweet deal for the small businesses. It's a 4% rate, except if you're covering payroll costs, like for group health benefits, salaries, mortgage interest, rent, utilities, and interest on debt that's been incurred before February the 15th, all of that's going to be forgiven. You won't have to pay that loan back. And why are they doing that? We're doing that to encourage small businesses not to lay off people, so we don't have that many people on the unemployment program, so these businesses stay intact as we get through the difficult part of this whole healthcare thing. Now,
That's huge. You get
up to $10 million per business or 2.5 times your average monthly payroll. So it's a pretty generous loan.
Okay, I would go back through it and put it in. You put it pretty good here, but I just asked specific questions. So to go back through, the small business goes to their bank, people they bank with. Is it a voucher, or the banks are just aware that the forms to put out for this loan? We just go in and say, hey, we're here for the small business loan, or how's that done?
Well, various banks, and we've talked to the Alabama Bankers Association, so we know a lot of members of the Alabama Bankers Association are already 7A lenders.
Okay.
So it's not like they've got to join the program. They're already in the program.
Okay.
All they need to have from the federal government are the guidelines that they have to go by to make sure that the person getting the loan, you know, qualifies. But it's so darn, we've loosened up the requirements so much and got rid of so much of the regulatory red tape, that's going to be fairly easy. And the reason why the bank would make the loan is that the federal government stands behind it 100%. So the bank's not going to lose a dime. They're not going to lose a penny. So there's every incentive in the world for the bank to make the loan. And the loan will be forgiven, which means the bank will be paid back by the federal government to the extent that the business is using the loan for payroll, you know, paying for group health benefits, paying for rent, mortgage interest, et cetera. It's a sweet deal for small businesses that are really up against the wall right now. And we want it to be a sweet deal because we want them to stay open, keep their payrolls intact, so that when we're through this darn thing, they can get back to work.
So even a business that, look at a restaurant business, right, that has a situation where they can't open their doors to their main dining room or something like that, and they need fewer of the staff, they would essentially be paid, like a paid furlough for those folks until it's time to come back.
Yeah. They just say, you're on my payroll. We can't open up right now. As soon as we open up again, come back to work, but you're going to get your paycheck every month. And the company's going to pay for it, because they're able to get this loan from their bank, not from the federal government, the bank. And the bank's going to make the loan because the bank knows the federal government stands behind it. So this is about as generous as we can make it to provide an incentive and encouragement to small businesses not to shut their doors, to stay open as, you know, with their payroll intact, et cetera, until we get through the worst part of this and we can start reopening the American economy. And we've been most, I mean, I in particular have been most concerned about small businesses. We can't, you know, they just don't have the means by which they can get through something like this. This is as generous as we can make it because we want to keep these small firms intact. Now, there's a separate provision, as you know, for anybody that's in what they call these severely distressed business sectors. And that's a different thing altogether because that's a true loan that won't be forgiven. But And we did that. That's the right thing to do because we've got some businesses down at the beach. You've got Shores and Orange Beach, by the way. They could be severely impacted if we don't have that for them. But this thing for the small businesses, it's a loan that can and probably almost all will be forgiven. So it's a sweet deal to help them stay in business.
I'm sitting here going, where's the catch, Congressman? I mean, is there something we're not talking about? Is this real? I mean,
the catch is that it costs a lot of money.
Yeah, well, it's a cost to all of us taxpayers long term as we go further and further into. I mean, we're talking $2 trillion now, but those people smarter than me said that's just the beginning. Do you believe that's true?
Well, I don't know yet. I don't want to start projecting. It depends on how long this healthcare thing lasts. The longer it lasts, the more expensive it's going to be for the economy. The shorter it lasts, the less expensive it's going to be for the economy. And we've already taken a hit. There's no getting around the hit we've already taken. We're simply trying to A, cushion the blow, and B, allow these firms to stay in place so that when we're over, or at least we start relaxing the restrictions, these small businesses can come back to life.
Now, it seems to me that this would supersede the question, because there's the paid sick leave question, right, that goes on here. Because if somebody was in a small business, if they were going to be out on paid sick leave, that whole process, it doesn't matter if the company's going to be able to write their check in full.
Yeah, but even with that program, for some reason you didn't qualify for the first one. I can't imagine a business that doesn't, that's under 500 employees. Even under that program, you get your money back for paying the sick leave, so long as it's sick leave the person has taken related to the coronavirus.
Because I know there were, you know, the, also the secondary part of that was if people had to stay home because children, you know, that was discussed, children were out of school. But it seems like, once again, on small business, just 500 or under, this answers like that question. It also would answer the child care question because they could be furloughed at home and still get a check.
Right.
It seems but like that answers a bunch of questions.
Yeah, and, you know, I was fit to be tied about that second phase bill that Pelosi tried to cram down our throat in the middle of the night. They needed a 90-page technical corrections bill because they screwed it up so badly.
Right.
And a lot of small business people were screaming about that bill. I voted against it, and they were right to be screaming about it. And all of us, whether we voted for or against the bill, who are big small business people, you know, we were really telling our leadership, you've got to do something to help small businesses. And this is the answer. And I got to say, they really responded. They listened to us. They listened to small business. And I think they come up with something that's, you know, it's not perfect because we're in an imperfect situation. But I think they've done as best as you can do under these circumstances. But it does cost a lot of money.
It does. I mean, the market seems to like it. I see a lot of green on the board today. The market likes it. But, yeah, long term, it's part of the bigger discussion of, you know, how in debt we are. I saw a headline this morning, and I don't know if it's accurate, but it said this spending package, stimulus package, is bigger than the budget for domestic and military combined.
That's correct.
Let that sink in. Wow.
Now, that doesn't include the mandatory programs, Social Security, Medicare, and the like, but the discretionary defense spending, discretionary domestic spending, it's like $1.4 trillion, and this will be closer to $2 trillion.
Hey, and I'm seeing a lot of questions here on the individual check, the thing you talked about first. How will that be delivered? Do you know?
It'll be delivered from the Internal Revenue Service.
Okay. So the IRS will be, because I know I've heard some stories about electronic transfer, but if somebody doesn't have electronic banking or something like that, it will be a physical check mailed to them, or?
Yeah, I assume that, you know, the IRS is going to have to come out with its own regs to do this, but the IRS gives tax refunds now by either paper check or electronic funds transfer, so the IRS has its own processes for figuring that out.
There we go. Well, we'll be, and timeline on that is just what depending on when y'all get to go vote, and then I guess how fast it takes the IRS to...
Yeah, as soon as the Senate votes, they'll set us up to have the House vote, and then my assumption is the president will sign it as soon as the House clears it, which, as I say, if the Senate gets through late today, it may be Friday before we actually get to the Senate. But Thursday, Friday, I mean, you know, let's get it done.
There we go. Congressman, thank you for your time. Thanks for the update, and we'll be getting you back on very soon.
Looking forward to it. Oh, by the way, I'm going to have a teletown hall tomorrow night at 5:50.
Okay.
You can get an update tomorrow night if you tune into that, and you'll find the details on that on my website.
All right, so go straight to the website, or can we link. If somebody just goes on Facebook, they can get that link, too, for the website?
Absolutely. You just dial in, and you're right into it. We did one of these last week and had almost 4,000 people. We think there are going to be a lot more tomorrow night.
Very good. I'll be one of them. Thank you, Congressman.
Thank you. Good talk to you.
Always good. Congressman Bradley Byrne, check it in. Let me just go country on y'all for a second. How about that, huh? That's huge. As small business folks, I'd like to hear from you, reaction to what you just heard. If that is the deal that is signed, what does that mean for your business? 343-0106.